Traveling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zemke.
Morena Kirsten, how are you?
I am good. I am a little nervous about this morning's segment because this is not a genre I know about, and I'm sure the listeners do.
Well, this is going to be your opportunity, listeners. 5395, text in all your thoughts because I know you're going to have some, because what are we talking about, Kirsten?
We're talking about Britpop.
Oi, oi.
Which is a terrible genre name, and all the bands hated it.
Yeah.
And it's sort of more rock than pop. In fact, it's kind of iconic rock, isn't it? Like, bands play their own instruments, write their own songs,
lots of guitars,
yeah,
lots of drums,
and that's sort of part of, I guess, its history. Is it's sort of a second British invasion. So as we've learned on this show, you know, rock music is this kind of actually really organic American roots music, you know, that's really embedded in American sort of history, culture, and politics. But I guess because they're Anglophone and also they've got a lot of global reach, there's been a couple points in history where the British have been able to sell back to America with their own music. And so apparently it does have really big echoes of like the 60s, musically, stylistically. Okay. So the 60s, when you had all the British invasion bands like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, that this was sort of a second time when British, you know, the UK was able to sort of have that, you know, real toehold in rock, and
totally
locally as well as globally, and sell it back. And it had that same sort of elements of 60s rock. It was very British accents, lads. And apparently at the time in the 90s, you know, there was grunge, which was really dour, you know, and then techno, which was and so this was like, you know, your sort of lads, silly yabo rock
party. It was kind of like party music, but also hit that sort of national identity thing, and that was kind of the angle the media took with it as
they call it Cool Britannia. And I guess echoing that, you know, if you think of Austin Powers, that shows you that 60s time, you know, where you would wear Union Jack mini skirts, you know. And and so this had that same element of the of London being this sort of cool capital of the swinging happening scene.
I'm gonna hit this first track. This is Suede with Beautiful Ones.
So Suede were one of the really important bands in this genre when they sort of started putting stuff out, especially, I mean, they got together in 89, but in 92 when they did their first album. This is from one of their like second or third albums, I think, in 96. But, you know, just really hitting it hard in the local scene, even before they're signed a bit, and getting covers of magazines.
Well, that's another thing that's interesting about Britpop, was they kind of also hit that sweet spot for music magazine journalism as well.
Yes, they were like indie music, but sold in the pop scene. You know, they had that. And I mean, that happened a lot in the 90s, even with grunge, you know, because indie like was literally named to be independent of the mainstream music industry, or alternative, you know. But, you know, same thing happened with grunge as well, that it was supposed to be anti-mainstream but became the mainstream. But these guys played with it a lot more and reveled in it. And then, you know, the press about, you know, relationships and fights and brawls and...
Because this is, like, probably one of the things that, if you don't know much about Britpop, you probably know at least about the tribalism of it. People had, they weren't just like, oh, I like Britpop. They were like, no, I like this band and I hate that band.
Yeah. So it had these big four bands, Oasis, Blur, Pulp, and Suede. I mean, there were other bands that, I guess, you know, just this, that's what makes a genre, doesn't it? A whole bunch of bands, similar sounds, similar vibe, speaking to a bunch of people at the same time. And yeah, there was a lot of rivalry, you know, North and South, you know, because, you know, the UK, well, especially even just Britain, you know, whole different accents, whole different backgrounds. Mm. And this had a real sort of working class vibe, suburbia vibe, and I guess really spoke to a lot of young people.
Yeah. And that was maybe the part of the kind of culture war that was going on there as well, as you had Blur, who were meant to be sort of like City Slickers, and versus like Oasis, who were like you know, rough lads from the estate kind of a vibe. And all of that was sort of hyped up by the media as well. There's a lot of like, maybe it wasn't as legit as it sounds like. It might have been a little bit fabricated, that narrative.
That's sort of another Tupac and Biggie.
Yeah.
They definitely leant into it, though, big time.
And you can hear elements of older British rock, you know, the Rolling Stones.
I've always thought Suede's got a bit of a T-Rex kind of hangover going on.
Yeah, you can really hear that. I mean, it's not gender-bendy like glam. Although, anyway, there's a few stories.
That was what I mentioned at the start of the show this morning. We had, like, a big debate about what bands to play this morning in the office yesterday, and I was told I was not allowed to play Pulp because I play so much Pulp on this show anyway. But they were the gender-bendy kind of one. They did a bit more of the, like, eyeliner...
And then
strange outfits,
Oasis, which were really old school masculinity.
Totally, yeah. And Suede kind of probably falls somewhere on the spectrum between Pulp and Oasis in terms of that gender stuff.
And you can hear that, you know, it's their catchy sing-along pop songs.
Yeah.
They have a chorus that you can sing along with, but yet it still has the electric guitars.
You can stand in a festival in a big muddy field and sing it with your friends.
So it really straddles that sort of rock and indie versus the sort of pop elements. That sounds like Get It On, Bang A Gong, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does. This is Oasis, of course. Probably one of the most iconic Britpop bands.
Yep. And they were media darlings for... fights and romances.
They
and
loved
marriages.
A drama. They still love a drama.
Oh my gosh.
So we're talking about the Gallagher brothers here. And what's their
and
whole
those haircuts, man.
Oh yeah.
Well, that was very 60s too, right?
Yeah. Real throwbacks.
I mean, the average person doesn't walk around with that look. It reminds me of all the kids, their haircuts like all the kids' TV shows in the 70s. Like the Buggle, you know, those haircuts.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Someone's got thoughts about Suede as well. Suede were the first, and they're not lads. That came later with the record company Wannabes, according to this texter.
Oh, manipulated by the record
company. There
companies.
We go. And Paul said, I was stoked to have seen Supergrass at the Power Station in the early 2000s. That would have been a mint gig.
Yeah.
So the Gallagher brothers notoriously hate each other's guts now.
Oh, gosh, really?
And,
I can't keep up.
And they, like, just any opportunity, especially Liam Gallagher. He loves to have an excuse to yell about Noel online.
Very vocal.
Very vocal on Twitter.
And they got done a couple times for plagiarism.
Did they?
With their music. So, you know, having that homage element put them in dangerous territory a couple of times. So they changed writing credits and sort of handled it. But they were one of the best-selling bands of all time.
Yeah.
And best-selling bands of that year, like, they really entered into that long-term importance territory, you know, like a Beatles or a Rolling Stones.
I really feel like Oasis makes me think a lot about film and just, like, the movies that all of their songs feature in. It's just so huge.
You're right, actually. Yeah, because they do sort of paint this instant picture and vibe of a place and
a time.
Yeah.
They also have become the ultimate meme for boys at parties with guitars as well.
Yep.
Play Wonderwall.
And you can hear, like, it's an electric guitar, and it's loud and it's distorted, but it's not completely alienating. You know, like, metal wants it to be so alienating that they're trying. So these bands use that sound, but don't make it so, you know, hard that... It's still pop. It's still sing-along.
It's totally
party.
Still pop. Yeah, it's got that. And that's, you know, it's pop in the sense that it was also extremely popular. Like, it was the mainstream.
Right.
It was the mainstream.
And it wasn't as serious as grunge. You know, it had a sense of humor and a sense of fashion in fashionable sportswear. That's what the one description was.
The old Adidas shell suit. So, Oasis and Blur probably had the most famous... beef with each other.
Yeah, and that kept them in the media too.
Yeah.
And they would release like albums on the same day, you know, versus each other and see who sold the most. I mean, Oasis ended up winning the game.
Yeah.
And especially internationally in the States. Suede had some success in the States as well. which is good that you can keep your sort of parochialism, your authenticity.
Mm.
And Americans loved it. So, you know, they were in like Lollapalooza, you know, they toured the States, and Americans really got into that sort of foreign vibe. I feel in New Zealand, we always get a nice blend of British and American music,
mm-hmm.
and we forget that sometimes they don't.
Yeah, yeah, that's so true.
And here's the weird thing, what killed... So Britpop was actually really kind of short-lived, kind of like just this mid-90s. Obviously, there's debates when it started, you know, whether it's 92 or 95 or whatever, to 97 or 2000. But what's funny is it's sort of killed off, A, by their own disagreements and infighting, which normal, but also it was killed off by, like, Spice Girls and Britney Spears and pop, you know, like the
it
girls...
It really swung the other way, yeah.
Boy bands and, you know... So, like, it was an interesting that the sort of lads were sort of killed off by this,
by the gals,
yeah.
And that is something, though, that is kind of typical of this genre. It was a very, very male-dominated.
Yeah.
And, in fact, this band...
Is not.
Is not. It's one of the very few that was not. We're talking about Elastica.
No. Now, here's some scandal for you. So, the lead singer, she was originally in Suede.
Yes.
And was dating the main Suede guy.
Old mate from Suede, whose name has gone.
But then, later, because she started dating Blur's Damon Albarn, she started pissing off Suede so much.
She crossed the bridge.
Yeah.
she
And showing up late for rehearsals and stuff, they kicked her out. It's kind of... We've had this a couple times on the show, these really great women, like Linda Ronstadt and Joan Baez and stuff, and they have this, like... really amazing dating history because they're just so
they're just in
demand.
Yeah. She has got the best voice.
They were also sued for copying plagiarism as well.
There's definitely an element of that in Britpop. They're like, we'll just take what we want. It's the new wave of colonization.
But also that, you know, they're trying to sound and echo these past decades, you know. And, well, some of the cases, that the people they copied had copied old black blues artists anyway.
Who
owns those riffs? And
yeah, someone's texted in saying this Elastica song is a direct rip-off of Wire's Three Girl Rumba.
Yeah, and they got sued. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how you do that. Mistake? Like, really? You're not sure?
Mistake.
You think?
Oh,
I know,
sorry. I didn't know this was
like, were
literally
you
another
like,
song.
Yeah. How do you, like...
Mistake feels generous.
Or do you really think it wasn't a ripoff? So this is 1995, but it was just such a moment. It was a generation consciousness.
And it's still got such, like, cultural hangovers as well. There's still the
apparently
sound...
Apparently there's Britpop Festival. Well, now, who knows what's happening, but it... You know, it's sort of had a revival sort of put 20 years on. People that grew up with it, and it...
Nick said that Britpop had really good T-shirts, apparently. Lots of good bits of band merch there.
Yeah, and I wonder if badges came back in.
Yeah, you know, it's like that whole thing. Everyone wants to be in the gang. Everyone wants to have their gang, and Britpop was really good for that because you could be like, yeah, I'm on Team Blur and screw you, Oasis.
And it was a party and going out. You know, it was places. It was live. It wasn't just like a listening at home. It was a going out and being with people.
And it was the era of huge... ridiculous messy festivals in the UK as well, like the, you know, Stone Roses and stuff kind of all feeding into that too. Someone else has also said Ocean Colour Scene, and there's also Cooler Shaker, some good other Britpop bands going on there as well, and a few Pulp fans out there too. I know there's lots of Pulp fans who listen to BFM. Hey, thank you so much for bringing us Britpop this morning.
And well, thank you guys for educating me a little more. This wasn't my scene.
It's a team effort from the whole BFM family. Hey, what are you going to be bringing us next week, Kirsten?
Well, this is going to be polarizing. We're going to be doing a cappella.
Ooh.
Which means without the band.
Okay.
Tessa's face.
Are we talking like Glee Clubs kind of a thing going on here?
Well, I think it was around for a long time before Glee.
We'll be Glee playing clubs. Tracks that actually made it in the charts.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
Yeah. But
intriguing.
I mean, that's an amazing way to people make music with
just
sounds
their
from
voices.
Your mouth.
All right. Well, that will be happening next week on Travelling Tunes. Thank you, Kirsten. Have a nice weekend.
All right.
That was Travelling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimke.
It certainly